In terms of environment, geography doesn't matter, race doesn't matter, but I'll tell you what does matter. Parental behavior and parenting styles, this goes to the history of the patient, have been found to develop, to influence the development of IBS. And we're going to talk about psychology again at the end, toward the end of this, but an example is some people learn how to be sick as children. And by the way, I want to stress again, that doesn't mean that they're not sick, but it means that some sickness is learned behavior. So if you had parents a parent or parents, that every time something unpleasant had to be done, the parent suddenly develops, stomach pains and gets to stay home from work. Or if children get to, the children can model this behavior, or if a child is rewarded for symptoms to stay home from school. And by the way, the most common childhood complaint that may or may not be real is gastrointestinal problems, stomach pain, abdominal pain. And the biggest reason is that it's pretty easy to figure out if a child has a cold. They're coughing, they have a fever, their nose is running. It's very difficult to prove or disprove stomach pain. And I've seen many, we've worked with so many families here over the last 26 years, and we've seen a lot of kids that get attention by being sick. And they're smart enough, even in grade school, to know that the best illness to use if you want to get attention, stay home from school, whatever, is stomach or gastrointestinal pain because it's very difficult for parents to say it doesn't exist. So the best way you train this into a child is that the child gets special treats. You get to, stay home and watch TV and that sort of thing. So that is learned behavior. We see this often, right? Not like all the time, but it's not uncommon. Parents who don't teach kids good coping skills, the children are more likely to develop IBS. And by the way, one of the reasons for this, and I just want you to think about this, when I start talking about the connection between the brain and the bowels, the gut and the brain, it's not very far-fetched. And our language is actually filled with this kind of representation of this connection. So how many times have you heard people say, "I had butterflies in my stomach. This just made me sick to my stomach. I was all choked up." You've heard people say things like that, right? Another one might be, "I just felt it in my gut. My gut instinct," right? So this connection between what we think and our brain and our gut is very well entrenched and well recognized by most people, I think. So this is not a walk on the wild side, what I'm telling you here. A study of mothers and their infants aged 0 to 18 months, mothers with functional bowel symptoms were more likely to take their infants to the doctors for all kinds of things. So it may result in early social reinforcement of illness behavior, run to the doctor to check out every abnormality. And we see people who've been trained in this way of thinking. And I think the medical profession, frankly, has capitalized on this. All these well baby, well child visits and all that sort of thing. What are you doing taking healthy children to the doctor for crying out loud? This is ridiculous. We didn't do that when I was a kid. I'm 64 years old, and sometimes I know I sound like I'm 110 when I say these things, but doctors were for sick people when I was younger, and now hanging out with doctors is just something people are conditioned to do. I don't think it's real productive. A study of 81 patients and it identified higher levels of rejection or hostility among fathers, but not mothers, was associated with somatization more so than abuse. Now, somatization is when a person develops extreme focus on physical symptoms that cause, like pain, that cause major emotional distress and problems functioning. And again, I want to be clear, people feel pain and discomfort, but the cause of it is what we're trying to get to. And you can see that where we might be going here. If some of this is an issue, then giving people probiotics and telling them to drink more water isn't going to help much. If you don't understand the cause, you can't help. So the researchers concluded that hyper-focus on abuse may have overlooked the importance of less extreme parenting styles in influencing somatization, and that parental parenting patterns were more predictive of somatization than abuse, age, and gender. Stress, anxiety, and depression do not directly cause IBS, but they do influence the gut-brain axis. Mood and emotions, anxiety and fear can alter it, and they can also have a great effect on gastrointestinal activity. emotional stress can cause IBS symptoms to worsen. And it's one of the things that I ask people is, tell me when your symptoms seem to be the worst, what's going on in your life? And often people can start to put together the connection together, or they already have figured that out by the time they get here. Emotions can modulate how the brain senses gut activity. The IPS patients often report much worsening symptoms when they're stressed. But I want to say something about that. The symptoms may be the same, but the perception of the symptoms is different. The signals are not necessarily accurate. So stress may cause the threshold for sensing the gut sensations to be lower. So here's what I mean by this. Two people experience the same level of discomfort. One person doesn't think about it at all. The other person says, this is miserable. I can hardly pay attention to what's going on. One person becomes stressed and it doesn't change their pain sensation at all. Another person becomes stressed and the same level of discomfort is perceived as being worse than it is. It is quite possible for people to have the same experience and have different responses to it. There's a higher incidence of sexual abuse in women with IBS than controls, which could be due to self-selection. People with a history of abuse are more likely to seek healthcare. They may have increased severity of symptoms and higher levels of psychological distress with worse coping skills. A study of 206 IBS patients, 44% reported sexual or physical abuse in childhood or later in life. One-third had never discussed it with anybody. Only 17% told their doctors. Abused patients were more likely than non-abused patients to report pelvic pain, multiple symptoms, and require more lifetime surgeries. Now, again, the abused patient isn't making up the pain. The abused patient may be feeling pain because of the history of abuse. So the pain is real. We have to do something about it because nobody likes living this way. But again, getting to the cause is important. More women than men seek healthcare for symptoms of functional pain disorders. And by the way, for everything else too. The ratio at one university medical center was 3-to-1 to 4-to-1, more women than men. And there are gender related differences and all kinds of things related to bowel function between men and women. And just by way of example, and this is kind of funny, but it's absolutely true. There have actually been studies that have shown this, and I've also just seen this in my own business here, talking to people for 26 years. Men, when they travel and that sort of thing, their bowel habits don't change very much most of the time. Women, when they travel and they're in unfamiliar circumstances, are much more likely to become constipated than men. So there are differences. And I know sometimes that's not too politically correct to talk about the differences between men and women, but there are some. You probably notice a lot of them right away, and this is just another one. Study of male and female IBS patients shows that women often don't pay attention to themselves properly, which may increase the stress, which contributes to more focus on physical symptoms. And I think, you know, I've met men like this too, who take care of everything but themselves. And it's all done for the right reasons, but it usually just blows up in the end because eventually if you don't take care of yourself, then you reach a point where you can't take care of anybody else either. But a common thing that I've noticed, and I've just had more experience with women than men in this area, is that focus on everything but self-care sometimes leads to worsening IBS and reports of worsening symptoms. A study of 50 male outpatients with IBS compared with 25 controls, hormone levels were measured, and balloon distension, this is when you insert a balloon into the rectum and then you apply increasing pressure. The patient's sensory thresholds were correlated with levels of testosterone, free testosterone, and sex hormone binding globulin. So IBS symptoms tend to be related to menstrual periods in women often and related to testosterone levels. And there's some indication that maybe testosterone is protective. We need more men to show up in doctors' offices saying, I have IBS, because we just don't have big enough cohorts to conclude if that's actually true. The main issues with IBS are GI motility, gastrointestinal motility, too slow, too fast, visceral hypersensitivity, which we're going to talk about in a minute here, psychopathology, the emotional mental component, and changes in the gut microbiota, which not only influence physical health, but influence brain function, behavior, and cognition. Those bugs in your gut have a role in almost everything that goes on with you, including your psychological state. So the autonomic nervous system, the nerves originate in the spinal cord and ganglia. You have lots of these nerves also in the abdominal area. Subparts of the ANS are sympathetic nervous system, parasympathetic nervous system, and enteric nervous system. I want to focus particularly on the enteric nervous system, or ENS, which is sometimes called the second brain. There are more nerve cells in the ENS than the spinal cord. And what the ENS allows the gut to do is to work without effort or conscious thought or any direction from the brain. And think about what would happen if you had to think about how to swallow and how to get food to move through your gastrointestinal tract and go to the stomach. And then you had to say, oh, I better release some gastric acid to digest the food. I think it's been churning around enough in there. I'll move it down. So all of this happens without any involvement consciously. All right. And the ENS is what is partially responsible for that. Viscera refers to internal organs, and there are many mediators and receptors. There's a big list here. I don't necessarily need to read it to you, but imaging typically shows nothing's wrong with the internal organs at all. But IBS patients have increased sensitivity to discomfort and pain. It's called visceral hypersensitivity. And so what this means is that it's an enhanced perception in response to sensations of normal motility. So the patients describe widespread pain and referred pain. So let me talk just for a second about what we can mean by a difference in perception. So let's say that today here in the office, we have a lunch that we make today, and it had a lot of Brussels sprouts in it. And boy, did they taste good. So sometimes people, when they eat a lot of cruciferous vegetables, have gas. Okay, so everybody eats the Brussels sprouts. We all eat too many. And so we have a lot of people in this building. So one person says, I shouldn't have eaten so much Brussels sprouts. I'm a little gassy today. Another person says, I'm gassy and a little bloated. I'm kind of uncomfortable. Some people don't even notice. And some people have guts that don't register any response to eating too many Brussels sprouts. The IBS patient says, I'm bloated and gassy. I ate too many of those Brussels sprouts. And as time goes on, I'm bloated and gassy. In fact, I'm really uncomfortable. I might need to leave early today. I don't know that I can really concentrate. This is very distracting. And then they go home and lay down. And by the way, this is just the person is experiencing the same level of discomfort as all the other people who had too many Brussels sprouts, but it feels different to that person. And I keep coming back to this because the worst thing you can tell a person with IBS is it's all in your head. It's not in your head, it's in your gut. What's happening is your perception in your head may be a little bit of a problem, and that can be resolved over time. And we'll talk about how to do that. But there's a very real feeling of discomfort. It's just more pronounced based on the same set of sensations in the IBS patient. So the IBS patient is processing information differently. And so PET scans taken before and after balloon distension of the rectum in IBS patients and controls, the people with IBS had increased activity in the prefrontal cortex, the area of the brain associated with anxiety and increased vigilance. The IBS patients had less activity in the anterior cingulate cortex, the area involved in opiate processing. So people who have IBS, they just don't block out painful sensations the way that other people do, and they feel pain more intensely. And so they have difficulty sorting out normal from abnormal sensations. And so this goes on, by the way, the difference between people is amazing. So I cut my hand and go work out and, you know, and nothing changes. Somebody else has the same gash in their hand and says, I don't think I better pick up any weights. We're both right, okay? So there's difference in people, but this is one that just happens to affect the gut.